Some community members are particularly concerned with the, looks like a zippity quick, snap your fingers and it's done, determination to essentially destroy the old library that's downtown or repurpose it for some other purpose like administrative offices and then move the books and library services to either the ground floor or the basement of a 4 or 5 story parking garage to be built over the area that now houses the farmers market on Wednesday downtown at Cedar and Cathcart Streets. So I went to this meeting and I'd hoped to play what I heard on the air, but I got all kinds of flack for two of the main activists who were putting it together, Gene and Mike, and I probably should have disregarded their concerns, but I did tell them that because I didn't make a solid announcement before this sort of public-looking meeting, which had 16 people in it, and there was no announcement that it was a private meeting, took place and apparently noticed the meeting was sent out to over 100 people, I decided not to play the audio, which is unfortunate. It's also deterred me from really closely looking at the issue again. But there were a lot of good points made by Gene Michael. That's Gene Brocklebank, I believe her name is, and Michael Lewis. At this meeting when they talked to the PR person for the new library construction project, and I believe her name is Susan... Susan something. Susan Nimitz, I believe. And I caught a few of the points. One of the most basic points was that this measure, the amount of money that was voted by the voters to upgrade the library, not to reconstruct it somewhere else, was $23 million. Susan's point was that this wasn't enough money, therefore they have to kind of piggyback on top of other expenditures that would go for a parking garage, as I understand it. This was disputed by almost everybody who spoke in the room in terms of the advantages of doing this and the need to do it based upon the claim that the building was old, it had become... for some reason unusable or less usable or needed to be refurnished and upgraded because of electrical system problems and plumbing problems. And this required tearing everything down and doing a complete remodeling. However, one claim that was made by the critics of the, as what they call, bury the library proposal, although I'm sure the proponents wouldn't call it that, is that the costs of refurbishing the existing library are vastly overstated or significantly overstated, that additional money could be raised if necessary, that the extra space that's currently not being used in the library, current library, could be put to good use. And again, the voters are being given a bait-and-switch deal where they were told they were voting for refurbishing and they're actually getting total destruction and removal of the library. Then there were other points made as well. The claims made by Susan, the PR person, was that most of the library is not air-conditioned and has to be shut down when the temperature goes above 90, that the pipes are broken 3 times, that the roof leaks, the elevator is 50 years old, the electrical system goes down, the windows have to be replaced, there's seismic problems that prevent us from them from building additional stories or expansions to the library. In response, Gene stated that it wouldn't cost $38 million to remodel the library as the proponents of the bury the library or move the library plan claim would cost much less. You don't need to rebuild the whole building. You just need to make some changes, refurbish it, and update some things. Susan responded, no, to get at the plumbing and electricity, you've got to tear out the walls. You have to replace the roof, replace the windows. There's this the ADA, American Disabilities Act concerns, which, of course, there'd be the same concerns in the new building. And I guess for people to really get a good sense of this, they can go to the website Don't Bury the Library or browse for that particular phrase. And they can also check out the open house that the City of Santa Cruz is holding tomorrow as part of its continuing PR Push It Through campaign. That's happening at the downtown branch at 224 Church Street across from City Hall. It's a self-led tour of the downtown branch. Information, or perhaps misinformation, stations will be set up throughout the library, including teen and children's areas, environmental design, lighting and security, 21st century computing, genealogy, meeting space and infrastructure. In other words, it's because I'm frankly persuaded by the critics of this program, I suspect this is another one of the frilly PR jobs. It has nothing to do with a real examination of the issues, but simply tends to press what the city staff wants to do and fully expects the city council to rubber stamp. People can go to this tomorrow if they want. That's on Monday. You can celebrate Hiroshima Day that way if you'd like. And I'd say educate yourself more by checking it out on the Don't Bury the Library website. But I'm afraid if you wait for Gene and Michael to lead the charge here, they are very, very much legalistically oriented. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with lawsuits, if you can fund them, or polite statements to the city council, if that's what the people who you've mobilized are willing to do, that's all they're willing to do. But I tend to believe that stronger, louder action is needed. And I don't think the leaders of this movement agree with me, but maybe some do. I don't know. So I also want to remind you that if you missed this show or any of the past shows and you are interested in catching up or going back to something that was said that you want to review, the latest shows are now coming up under the category Lost Shows. Don't be fooled by the words latest shows as a link. Don't go to the latest shows links unless you're looking for stuff that's before October of last year, because unfortunately the forwarding service at Radio Libre has not been doing a good job there, and we haven't yet been able to find out how to get them to shape up. But you will find the shows under Lost Shows on the huffsantacruz.org website. That's HUFF Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. So, also on the gloomy front, here's a story from the Berkeley Daily Planet. Berkeley council members cave on urban shield after SWAT team threats. This is by Becky O'Malley. That's Chris Crone's mother-in-law, by the way, for all of you who are looking for family ties. Watching Monday's special meeting of the Berkeley City Council was dispiriting, she writes, to say the least. All I could think of, seeing the tortured rationale that the majority of council members used to justify caving into the Berkeley Police Department's embarrassing display of blatant blackmail, was, what chumps. For a good conventional news report of what went down on Monday, there's an East Bay Times story, which she links. The reporter captured the essential points of what I saw carried out at excruciating length by waffling council members pretending they were not being hijacked. Urban Shield is a glorified trade show, folks, the expensive high-tech version of those notorious gun shows so deplored by Berkeleyans of almost all stripes. True, it's financed by the Department of Homeland Security. That's not a plus, is it? That's the same department that has managed to mislay the parents of several thousand migrant kids. Doubtless, at best, criminal at worst, And the icing on the poison cake is that they're cooperating with ICE. ICE, of course, being the Immigration Control Enforcement. Well, then it's run by the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. Again, not a plus. Here's a rundown on what the electeds in the county think of how the sheriff's been running the event. Alameda County supervisors vote to end Urban Shield as currently constituted. Now, if the supervisors, some of whom come from places more conservative than Berkeley, are down on Urban Shield, why does Berkeley lag behind? The story in the East Bay Times by Ali Tadian picked up what I, that is Becky O'Malley, thought was the most depressing aspect of the whole dreary discussion. One council member's dismissal of the effect of pulling out of Urban Shield as symbolic. Of course it's symbolic. And what exactly is wrong with that? Here we are in the home of one of the world's great universities. I don't know about that. Of which said council members and several of her colleagues are graduates, and they don't understand the virtue and power of symbolic gestures. When I was at UCB more than a half century ago, symbolism was a big-time topic. But perhaps times have changed, and students study marketing instead. Let me spell it out for you. In the long line of public commentators on Monday were several of the most articulate spokespeople for Berkeley's diminishing African-American population. There was at least one self-identified Muslim. There were resolute civil libertarians and other highly visible neighborhood progressive activists. All of them deserve to get at least one symbolic bone from the, quote, newly progressive Berkeley City Council in a society where the constituencies they represent are under constant attack in matters small and large. That very same day, as it happens, I heard a visitor to the Bay Area, a family friend, a well-brought-up young woman with impeccable demeanor, was pulled off BART by hostile enforcers who accused her of not having bought a ticket, which, of course, she had. Oh, did I mention that she's black? And then I got an email from a contemporary, a distinguished woman who was a former vice mayor of Berkeley, connecting a current Bay Area incident with something that happened to her years ago. Topic, shopping while black. Times change, but not that much. You may say that neither of these incidents touches on Urban Shield, but they both do, because they're all about suspicion. Who's suspected of what and why? And also, how are police supposed to deal with situations where suspicion translates into action, as, for example, the recent killing of a Trader Joe's employee in L.A. by police chasing a suspect? And my UCB education in the power of symbolism, I got in the field training in the role of marketing as an executive in the family tech enterprise. That's what makes it possible for me to see that Urban Shield is nothing more than a trade show for preconceived technical solutions in search of profitable, quote, problems. When I was in business, I used to say, not always with anyone listening, let's define problems before we suggest solutions. That's the Urban Shield vendors in a nutshell. Prepackaged solutions which actually create problems. I stood in my company's booth at trade show after trade show, Comdex, Consumer Electronics Show, the Hanover Fair in Germany, the one in Manhattan for phone technology, and many more, and saw innumerable technical fixes that were totally unneeded, pushed by inept companies that eventually vanished. I see the same pattern in the vendor-run Urban Shield enterprise, spiced up by games masquerading as adrenaline-fueled training exercises. If it weren't sexist, I'd say that boys just love to have toys. But some women have caught the bug, too. What actually pays off is the skill of talking down a tense situation. Patience, tenacity, persuasion, virtues traditionally attributed to women, but also available for men. Berkeley police have done pretty well recently with this stuff. I don't know about that. I went into the thick of things when the white supremacists were in town and was impressed to see how well the men and women of the BPD were able to do nothing when that was the best response. Nothing that Urban Shield offers would help them keep up this good work. On the other hand, we should all be ashamed of the report that some members of BPD's SWAT team hijacked the votes of Mayor Arguin and his colleagues by threatening to quit. I believe that's called the I'll take my marbles and go home strategy, unbecoming in a third grader and inexcusable in grown men. Whoever these childish fellows are, sorry, I'd be surprised to hear women were involved, Berkeley really doesn't need them on our SWAT team and, in fact, shouldn't trust them either. Almost every day, right here in Berkeley, I hear stories from African-American friends and family members of encounters with hostile, self-important members of the law enforcement profession. Symbolism isn't nearly as good as action, but it's much better than doing nothing. The Berkeley City Council should have used this opportunity to reinforce the idea that police officers should be first and foremost peacekeepers, experts above all in the power of persuasion. The two African-American council members got it, as did Kate Harrison and Chris Worthington, two other council members. As for the rest of them, Monday's vote represents a colossal failure of nerve. Several of them should have known better. And that's Berkeley, or Becky O'Malley, in the Berkeley Daily Planet. Berkeley council members cave on urban shield after SWAT team threats.
And the flag-draped coffins are a sailing home, and the waves are watching as the engine draws, as the ship draws near, hear the bugle maul, the sad and silent song of a soldier with a hero's greeting. We will welcome him with a hero's speeches. We will honor him with a hero's ending. We will bury him. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier, and comfort his family with a telegram. We regret to inform you we have lost a man, but we gave him the highest medal of the land. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. We know what an awful price he had to pay, but the enemy was contained for another day. We trained him well, he would have wanted it that way. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. Oh, the weary wounded, they wait by his side, wondering why they hadn't also died. The picture of patriotic pride. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. And the flag is at half-mast, wet with foreign rain, ignored by the strangers he had helped to train. To him it was duty, to them again. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. At Arlington he's lowered down without a pause, and his native land welcomes him with open jaws. And the tombstone reads, such a noble cause. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. Now a moment of silence for the broken man, while the president proudly crows, we'll never bend, and cheers the replacements marching off again. That's the sad and silent song of a soldier. And the flag-draped coffins are a sailing home, and the waves are watching as the engine draws, as the ship draws near, hear the bugle maul, the sad and silent song of a soldier.
That was Song of a Soldier from the album A Toast to Those Who Are Gone by Phil Oakes. One of the songs of his I'm not familiar with, but I think I played it before, probably a decade ago. You're tuned to Free Radio still, 101.3 FM, hopefully, or probably the, well, maybe the stream. We aren't necessarily the most powerful station in the area. And again, a reminder to you folks, there's still a reward. It's a mystery to me whether it's 300 or 500, but it's one of the two. If you call in with news of a studio space for us that we can rent, at 10 by 10 space is what we're looking for. Access to electricity, Wi-Fi, potty, you name it. Well, that's what we need. And the number to call is, well, if you call my number, I will pass you on to the collective, 423-4833. That's my number, 423-4833.